grazing drive, and you can help shorten that drive. And we'll give you some information throughout the rest of this afternoon and beyond to help you do just that, that is, shorten the drive. So thank you so much for tuning in. It's 1 p.m. in New York City at 99.5 FM WBAI and WBAI.org. Coming up next, The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
This is Armand DeMille. I'll be right with you. And we're right with you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here at WBAI. Sorry for the beginning. Ah, such technical, beautiful things to deal with. Life does become difficult at times, and it's how you approach it that makes the difference. The other day, I run into a person. I see her sitting there, and I said, wait a minute, I know that face. Who is this person? In speaking to her, she was somebody I used to watch on the news. And she would be an anchor person. She was an anchor person on Bloomberg News. Her name is Carmen Roberts. A little bit of conversation, I saw there was a depth to Carmen Roberts that was not just her being a news reporter. So we spoke for a bit. And after I spoke with her, I thought this would be a very good person for me to bring on the air for a number of reasons, some of which she could teach us about what she's doing. And Sherry Siegel also with us. Hi, Sherry. Good to be here again.
Hi, Armand. Thanks for having me.
Exciting, huh, to do this today?
Very.
Carmen Roberts. Interesting person. News reporter. Get this. Bloomberg Business News. So we're not going to just let that go to waste. We're even going to be talking about Goldman Sachs later today. But at the beginning, I want to introduce Carmen. Carmen, give me a little of your background and what your current intentions are.
My current intentions. Wow. Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me on the show. I'm very happy to be here. And my current intentions and my background. All right. So I have been doing financial news for nearly 20 years. I've worked in New York and in Japan, around the world. And I love it. It's because it's the lifeblood of, democracy, business. And what I am currently doing is that I'm on my own. And I left Bloomberg last year and am now trying to figure out how I can make the world a better place by creating a show that's going to help people find happiness and give them the tools. Because I think everybody wants to be happy, but most people don't have a clue how to get there.
So your focus is on some kind of a positive way of living.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, you even have that woven into your name of what you're planning to do. And you plan to do this through the TV media, people should understand. And just to understand that when Carmen says she loves the whole process, she's also a major Buddhist. And we're going to talk about the blending of a Buddhist mind with Bloomberg News, Bloomberg Buddhist. They almost go together. No, I'm not. Don't
Mike's
going to
be calling now.
Here comes the disclaimers. I know I'm going to incite disclaimers. I don't mean to incite disclaimers, but you were there on Bloomberg.
I was, but
Mike is an interesting man in his own way. Okay,
absolutely.
So let's just stick
to life itself, right?
But what's going to, don't want to talk about Mike's personal life. I'm only kidding. See, they get afraid, these media people. Don't get me in
look,
trouble.
Hey, look, I like Mike, so let's not even go there. So, all right, go ahead.
Okay. Now, as a Buddhist, no, in doing your programming over the years, you've had a chance to step in and out of the business world. But while you've been doing that, at the same time, you discovered a different way of channeling your mind. Now, I worked in Wall Street for 10 years when I was younger, when I was going to school at night. And I remember looking around me and seeing all these executives who were with me and traders. And I was watching them just either die of heart attacks or just have empty, empty lives. And I said to myself, I remember saying, okay, I could be this and I can make a lot of money doing this. But I don't want to be like them. And so I too searched out for a different way of doing myself. Now, Sherry, you had the same thing happen to you, didn't you? You were in the medical world. What did you say to yourself?
I said that that the medical world is very focused on medicines, but was going away from healing. And for me, healing is what I went into the profession to do. So it led me to the path of learning about alternative methods of helping someone through using their minds.
And it led you to alternative methods of using your own mind, right? Not just using their minds. What you decided to do was not become the medical mind according to the design of neurology as they would have you be, and just fitting into how do I get the right insurance, how do I get this to work, how do I get that to work. You accessed a different part of your mind in order to do that. Just as Carmen, you decided that your mind would be different, just as I decided I wasn't going to let my mind go to just turn into this money-making machine.
Well, I would like to say, first of all, there's nothing wrong with money, okay? And that the difference is, what do you do with it and how do you get it? And what kind of life condition do you exhibit in your life? What kind of person are you while you're going after that money? There's absolutely nothing wrong with trying to achieve and have a better life. So that's very fundamental, I think, in understanding, you know, how we function in that regard.
You're a fundamental moneyist.
I like to call myself a compassionate capitalist. I believe in capitalism, but I believe in compassion, and I think you can blend the two.
Okay, now this is important because even though I hear you say that, you do have feelings about money when it's earned at the cost of somebody's well-being. You do have feelings, and we discussed it, even though I know you're sounding like you're defending the entire system. But I know that's not true.
No, I'm not defending the entire
system. I know
you're
very
exactly.
conscious in yes. the way that you use your money and spend your money, even personally.
I believe that we have to be aware of all of humanity, that we have to think about, okay, if I take from the world, let me give back to the world. So when I say there's nothing wrong with wanting money, okay, so you get that money, now what are you going to do with it? Are you going to be selfish with it? Are you going to build a big ivory tower and sit up in it and not do anything to help anybody else? That's, I think, the wrong attitude.
So what would happen to you as you were reporting in Bloomberg News? And you would be reporting on some of the stuff that goes on in business that seems so exploitive, like, you know, like the mortgage crunches and things like that. Did you ever ache on the inside and say, oh, man, humanity is missing it, while you're doing the reporting?
Well, of course, as a conscious human being, whenever you see something that has gone awry, that there's when there's greed or there are dirty tricks or something that's happening, somebody taking advantage of somebody else. Of course, if you have any kind of consciousness at all, that you think that's horrible. But then again, of course, as a reporter, I can't bring that into the story. I have to report, here's the story, you decide, okay? So,
but I'm still asking you what you felt.
What I felt. Well, for instance, when people were sold subprime mortgages that were, that was hidden maybe, for instance, that the rates would balloon after a year, and they had no idea this was going to happen, and there were kinds of manipulations to manipulate their salary. Now, some of them, on their own part, were taking advantage of the system by agreeing to things that they knew were not true, but others were hoodwinked.
I don't know who, I'm a little lost on the pronouns. Some of who was who?
Some people that signed those subprime mortgages.
You mean that bought them?
That were financing homes. Were
getting, the ones who were financing.
The ones who were actually going, the homeowners. Some of them were taking advantage of the system,
course.
Too.
Of course, and they were saying to themselves, I can't really afford this.
It is, but hey, they're going to give me the money, I'll do it.
Right. So some, out of that feeling that we talked about, and this kind of brings it to us, which has to do with this kind of insatiable appetite that humans have, this insatiable kind of appetite for more. And there you are saying at one point, Joe has a house, why don't I have a house? Well, I can't pay my rent where I am now, but I'll get a house anyway, and I'll get a mortgage, and it's only 2% this year, and I'll worry about the fact that it's going to 10% next year later.
Right.
Well, and so this insatiable appetite of mankind keeps manifesting in what the world likes to know of as greed. But I think greed is almost too strong a word, because I think it falls more on what you were saying, Sherry, about addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the insatiable addiction, the insatiable appetite becomes part of the addiction.
We call addiction the disease of more, because
the disease of more.
You have one and it's not enough. You have two and it's not enough. Or anyone who suffers from the disease, they know that it becomes, it feels good at first, but it pulls them back into wanting more and more. And then there's really no end to more.
But as a Buddhist, as you mentioned, that I've been practicing Buddhism for many years, and as a Buddhist,
I actually didn't tell them yet.
You didn't? You said you? Yes, you did. You said I was a Buddhist.
But, okay, so I want to talk about that.
But I have learned my understanding through my practice of Buddhism. I practice nature in Buddhism, but my understanding through that is that, you know, all human beings have the potential for negativity, and we have the potential for being positive. It's all there in our lives. And that insatiable desire, that's one of those negative life conditions. But we can tap into a higher consciousness. We can, through different paths, and I practice one way, but bring out our wisdom, our enlightened wisdom and courage and compassion. Those are also within us. And so that
person...
Can we
back that up for just a second?
Yeah.
Back it up. I want to ask you a question.
So if you have that insatiable desire, then, okay, let's get rid of that and apply wisdom instead.
Well, how about this? How about what I think I've done? I've taken my insatiable desire and I've shifted it to wisdom and make it an insatiable desire for wisdom.
Exactly.
So it's not getting rid of it.
Well, everything is relative. And that's, you know, nothing is either black or white. It's what you do with it. As I was saying earlier about money. Money is not evil. Money is not bad. It's what you do with it.
So we're not getting rid of the insatiable desire.
You're taking, well, insatiable maybe we might do away with, but turn it into a desire for a different kind of desire. You know, so desire to make your life better, desire to help humanity, a desire to help your children, a desire, you know, to make the world a better place, a desire to make yourself happiness, a desire for happiness based on compassion and courage and wisdom versus a desire for happiness that you think is happiness based on greed or negativity or...
So I could see how we would have to shift some of our insatiable desires, because we have the potential for it. You know, did you ever fall in love with somebody? And you fall in love, you have somebody who you're loving, and you have this insatiable desire to be with them. How bad could that be? Well, then they don't answer their cell phone and you get crazy. And now it's not so good. So then you think about them and you make a wish to yourself. You say, I just hope they're doing whatever they're doing is fun. I hope they're having a good time. And now you've moved your insatiable desire to a desire for them to be happy. But then you say, but I hope it's not with somebody else. And now you go back to being crazy. So that thing that drives you further and further and further is like a wild bronco. You've got to kind of grab it and ride it, but you have to ride it gently. You have to take it somewhat softly.
If it's based on negativity, but if it's based on a higher life condition of love and compassion and even enlightenment, then it's a whole different... Like, so you fall in love with that person.
I don't trust love as a motivation.
Okay, compassion. If you fall in love with somebody and you're have and you're in this negative life state, then that person you fall in love with doesn't return, or maybe looks at someone else and you get jealous, and then your anger comes out, and then the anger leads to the breakup of the relationship, and then that makes you feel worse, and then when you feel worse, you become more negative, and you spiral downward, downward, downward. But if you have, you bring out of yourself this higher life condition of compassion, which is in there, and there are ways to get to it, because, like, for instance, what I do is chant, and we can talk about that later. But you bring out the higher life condition, then when you fall in love with someone, then you're like really wonderful to that person because you're compassionate and you're loving and you have your wisdom functioning, and you know not to to treat this person badly, and you don't even desire to treat this person badly, and then that engenders greater love and creates an entirely different kind of relationship that goes higher versus lower.
And this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. People are people, you know. We have ways of trying to learn. I'm not sure if there's an answer for everyone. I'm not so sure. But if we take this world, the materialistic world, and we take how people get lost in it, and how sadly lost they get in it, and then we look for alternatives. Carmen Roberts says, you know, I found an alternative. I found Buddhism, and it made a real difference in my life. And I know she wants to talk a lot about you, but I'm going to ask her to talk about her and what it does for her personally. Where did it take her personally? And how did this practice manifest on a day-to-day basis? Okay, Carmen, so where? What would happen to you?
Well, I can give you some very concrete examples of how I use Buddhism in my daily life. And I'm in the profession, the television news business, have been for many, many years. It's a very cutthroat business. It's a very competitive business. And so just being in that environment, you have to have great confidence in yourself. I found myself, you know, early on in my career being, you know, facing rejection a lot from news directors saying, oh, you're not good enough, or you don't have my look, whatever. And I could have taken that rejection and given up. And I really tell you that if I hadn't been chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, that I would have given up. I would have said, this is too hard. I don't want to do this. Nobody wants me. Nobody, you know, thinks I'm good enough. So I'm going to quit. But because of my chanting, I developed more confidence in myself, and I believed in myself, and I had courage to not give up. And so nobody helped me along the way. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have somebody leading the way. I was actually married to someone who was in the Navy, and so I was not able to leave and go to a different market. I had to make whatever happen for me where I was, in whatever market I was. So it was a big battle, and I really clawed my way up myself. And I believe, had I not had this practice to help center me and bring out my higher life conditions, I would have quit. I would have said, I'm going to go do something else.
That's what I did. I quit.
You quit.
I quit. But it's interesting. Let me ask you about it. So you had a practice for yourself, and part of what you learned is you have to quiet your mind. You learned a way. No, not quiet your mind. I see you shaking your head. Mm-hmm. You have to adjust your mind in some way. That whatever way that you were during the day, which was crazed, radio, image, are you doing a good job? Are you reporting right? Are you getting the pay position? Now, remember, she's at the pinnacle. She's at the highest point of TV news reporting. She's an anchor. And she gets to a spot where everybody's clawing to bring her down. Everybody wants her spot. So here's Carmen. And she's got to do a good job and maybe watch for the people who are grabbing at her ankles at the same time. And she has to take away this kind of chaotic feeling that you get when you're in the middle of that. And she has to go home and do something. So what is it that you did for yourself that kind of made the change? I know chanting the words, but how'd you discover it? How'd you get there?
How did I discover chanting?
How did you discover this solution for this chaos in your life?
Well, discovered chanting when I was a teenager, and someone told me about it, and I started and I tried it, and I felt this incredible energy in my life. And the first time I heard people chanting Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, it was like this energy wave washed over me, and I said, wow, there really must be something to this. So as I started practicing, I was able to experience this higher energy in my life, this higher life condition.
Let me just go back and say, I was 17 years old, and you begin the chanting. Mm-hmm. And you are chanting with other people? Or are they just chanting alone?
Well, both. You do it both ways.
But you?
Well, no, with other people.
You were doing it with other people. Mm-hmm. So now, here you are in this kind of new harmonic family, group of people who are chanting together, and you feel something inside, and you say, ah, this is a nice feeling. This feels better than everything else I knew from my other family, mm-hmm. everything else I knew from what was around me. And that's how I think most people step into it. They kind of step in, and when they find the group that does it, they step in through the group. They feel that harmony, and then they take it home for themselves. And now this starts when you're a teenager, right? And you start carrying it with you everywhere you go. So was that a part of your career the entire time, or did you abandon it for a while and come back to it?
No, I actually started practicing Buddhism. I learned about Nam-myoho Renge Kyo before I started into the news business. And so it's been with me my entire career. And again, I say that I really believe that that applying Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, which, if I could just stop for just a moment and say what that is, because I'm saying these words and the audience may not even understand. It's basically Nam-myoho Renge Kyo is a chant. So we say these words over and over again. It's a way to harmonize your life with the universe. It means devotion to the mystic law of cause and effect through sound and through the teachings of Buddhism. So when we chant, we actually tap into our own enlightened life condition. When I chant, I'm able to tap into the core of my life and bring out the wisdom of my life. And because Buddhism teaches we contain all the power and all the knowledge of the universe inside of us. So I'm able to tap into that and able to use that.
So would you go to work after having
chanted the morning?
Mm-hmm. And what would your attitude be as you approached work? Would you feel clear as you're walking in, as opposed to the frenetic energy of the beginning of a day, as most news broadcast has?
Well, you always have that energy with you in the news world. And so whenever I would chant, and it would make, chanting makes you feel stronger. And it helped me to be able to, as you said, yes, be clearer, but also I was able to be courageous, you know, like to be able to stand up because it's a very negative environment in all newsrooms.
Sure is, absolutely.
And there's a lot of you know, yelling and sometimes, and you know, so you have to be able to stand up for yourself. And I was able to use my courage that I tapped into, and to use my wisdom to know like which battles to fight and when to say something and when not to say something. And then also I can tell you that, you know, life isn't an easy path, and that's where Buddhism comes in. Is that, you know, the Buddha wanted everybody to. It's taught to see suffering. You know, it's looked around us, all the suffering in life. So life is problems. The difference is, do we let our problems cause us suffering, or do we, you know, overcome them? So.
Well, wait. Now there. Here we run into the different perceptions of Buddhism, and I know this may be difficult, but Sherry, I think you had your questions about the suffering and the non-suffering.
Well, I have some of an understanding about Buddhism, or parts of Buddhism, and what I understood was that there are four noble truths, and what I understood, the way I understand that is, suffering exists, there are causes for suffering, there is an end to suffering, and there are ways out of suffering.
Those are the four noble truths. Let's repeat them again.
As I understand them,
mm-hmm.
suffering exists, there are causes for suffering, there's an end to suffering, and there are ways out of suffering. So it's a rudimentary, this is maybe a Westerner's version.
Okay, and that was focused on suffering. Now, mm-hmm. now you see that differently, don't you, Carmen?
Well, Buddhism is about the end of suffering. It's about getting rid of the suffering. Doesn't mean you're going to get rid of your problems. you're always going to have problems because we're human. That's part of being alive. But Buddhism is about not suffering from your problems. So when I chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, I'm able to have a strong life condition, also wisdom and courage that whenever I face a problem, that I'm not defeated by it, or I don't go crawl into bed and pull all the covers over my head and say, oh my God, I can't deal with that, or, you know, run away from my problems. I have all the strength that is inherent inside, you know, of me. I'm able to tap into it and I can confront. Like, even
Carmen, I appreciate, but let me get, answer to the clarification.
I know what I was going to say, but like depression.
Well, no, before you go to, I don't want to throw another subject in. I want to stick with what Sherry's
suffering.
Asking. So is life about suffering, even if it's about the end of suffering, is it about suffering? Or does your form of Buddhism say, no, that's not it. It's not about suffering. It's about happiness.
Life is about becoming happy.
Now, what's the difference?
Happy, yes.
So one group says life is about happiness, and the other one says it's about ending suffering.
Well, I think it's a little bit of an interpretation.
Yes, of course.
Shakyamuni Buddha began teaching Buddhism 2,500 years ago in India, and the reason he did was to end suffering. That he looked around, he saw all the miserable conditions of life, and if you can imagine 2,500 years ago what life was like, you know, people eking and living out of the earth. So he became enlightened to the law of the universe, to life itself, and he began teaching Buddhism. And those Buddhist teachings have evolved to where they are today, and to my practice, which is a portions of, you know, comes from his teachings of the Lotus Sutra, which is one of his teachings. And it taught that we all have the potential for great happiness. We don't have to suffer. Okay. Yes, we do have problems, and yes, we will always have problems, but we don't have to suffer from them. And when they
which is different than from what I understood from a couple of monks who were here, who said life is suffering, not life is freedom from suffering.
There's a concept that desires that your desires lead to suffering. But in the Lotus Sutra, it actually explains that desires are enlightenment. In other words, that your desires are what leads you. My desire to be a television news anchor, my desire to have a happy marriage, my desire to do whatever it is I do in my life, that's the motivation for me. That's what makes me become a better person. That's what makes me chant, is I want to do this. I want to accomplish this. I want to be, you know, I want to get this job, or I want to, you know, create this new program. So I chant so I can tap into all of my potential as a human being, everything that I have. I can be like cooking on all cylinders.
So for anybody who's in a high-pressure position, trying to find a balance within the balance, you know, we had that young man here on the radio the other day who wrote the book about being a physician. Mm-hmm. Remember, what was his name? Spiegel.
Yes.
Right.
You should know that.
Yeah. And he was here, and he was talking about how becoming a physician, he wrote a beautiful book about it. He wrote a beautiful little book about ways of becoming a physician and dealing with the pressures of it. There's got to be a way that you could find your balance. For Carmen Roberts, she was in this high-powered position, that kind of thing that would really fry your brain. And instead, she chose, and always chose to have with her, her form of discipline that takes her to a place that helps her access her higher, her better power, you know, her better self. And that's what I think is really what we're searching for. We're going to learn more about that when we get back from our break. And I know you've done the very same thing, Sherry, that it's been kind of a dedication to make sure that you could reach to the best Sherry you could be, which is why your dedication and your work, you know, I love the way you work and the way you make this commitment to the quality and integrity of your work. So that's what we have in common here. And when we get back from our break, we're going to talk more about it. But I would like to talk with Carmen about some of the things that are going on in the world today in the financial news, because both she and I understand stuff about it that most people don't understand. And I'd like us to carry on a conversation about that as well and then continue with our discussion. This is Armand DeMille. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, a little music and we will continue. That's a piece that always gets me. That's a lullaby by Ali Akbar Khan. This is Armand DeVille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about how you try to stay sane in today's society and what you do. And we're talking about some of this crazy world that's out there. And we're talking with someone who's negotiated some of the highest level of functioning as far as the financial world goes. A TV news anchor woman, Carmen Roberts, who's about to create some new venture for us that's going to be kind of amazing. We'll be seeing that all over the place. But in the meantime, Carmen, we're going to get a little further about what Carmen has learned. Sherry has a question here.
I wanted to know, at age 17, what did saying these words do for you? Where were you in your life, and how did it change your life?
Okay, so for those of you who just tuned in, those words are Nam Myoho Renge Kyo. I was 16, and I was in a girls' boarding school in Virginia. I was really very unhappy. I was away from my family, no boys around, important for a girl, right? My father died that year. I was just really suffering. I was so unhappy in this school that I actually had developed a rash all over my body. I was like, it looked like I had measles from my head to my toe and had to take oatmeal baths. I mean, I was really, really unhappy. And this one girl at the school had been to a Buddhist meeting, and all she knew was, okay, if you say these words, Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, it'll make you happy. I mean, she didn't know anything else about it. And so she and I would sit around in our rooms, in our dorm rooms at night, and we would chant. And so the reason that I kept chanting was when the next day, after the very first time that I chanted, the next day when I went through my day at school, girls who had been snobby and wouldn't talk to me, I mean, you know, come on, girls 16, 15, 16, 17, they're just real cliquish, and they can be very brutal. And I was new in the school, so I was like the new kid, and I got, you know, a lot of the brunt of that. And so these girls who were the seniors in the class and who wouldn't give me the time of day all of a sudden were nice to me. I mean, it wasn't my imagination. It actually literally happened. And that was my first awakening. I was like, whoa, something's going on here.
So all the way back at age 16, you're having a major reaction being separated from your family. Let me ask you something. What do you know about Buddha and how that relates to your connection to Buddhism? When you say Buddhism, do you think Buddha at all?
Well, Buddha means enlightened one.
But do you think of being a Buddha being?
I think of me being the Buddha.
So you don't think about a being Buddha? Like
no, because
a fat guy sitting under a tree.
No, because he was simply the historical Buddha who began the teachings of Buddhism on this planet. But his teachings were that we are all potential Buddhas.
So you don't think of a Buddha being?
I do not. I think of me, and I think of the law of the universe, this mystic law of Myoho Renge Kyo, which is in every cell of my body. I think I am the cosmos. I am the universe. I am the Buddha.
You're 16 years old. Your father dies. Mm-hmm. Must have been an enormous loss being away from your parents and having your father die. Did that happen while you were away at school?
My dad and mom were separated. So my dad, who had been in the army and had retired, he was not, we weren't living together, but he died, actually over Christmas vacation. And
while you were with him?
No, I didn't get to see him. I hadn't seen him for about 6 months, and he died.
Wow. So think about the pressure on the 16-year-old girl. She's comes from a separated family, right? Dad is a military guy. Dad is there occasionally. You haven't seen him for 6 months. You're kind of alienated, and you're alienated from the kids at school, too.
Very much
this
so.
This alienated self, you know, is a lost little girl. She's, like, really precious, and she goes there, and then Daddy dies on top of all that, and you don't get to see him. And somebody comes along and offers you a way to find that spot inside you that is missing right now because you had it all waiting for someone to fill it. You might have been offered Catholicism. You might have been offered Protestantism. You might have been offered something at that point. If you could have found in prayer that thing that made you feel whole, you could be totally committed to it now. Because I believe when people take something on like this and they make it an integral part of our lives, in my life, which I've done as well, it's filling a hole. It's not about suffering so much, but it's about a specific suffering. It's about a thing, an ache. And this ache that sits in the 16-year-old girl, where she's alienated from the world, lost her daddy, hasn't seen him for 6 months, separated mom and dad, suddenly she finds something that says, you belong, you're significant. And you feel it when you're chanting with the other people, too. I belong, I'm significant. And it changed your life. Changed it. And you bring it with you everywhere you go. It's your practice. It's a beautiful example of it.
And there are many paths to happiness, without question. And the difference is, does it work for you? You know, am I able to take this tool, in Nam-myoho Renge Kyo chanting as a tool to make my life better? And I was able to do that.
From
that moment on, I've been, every time I've had a struggle, every time when I was married, and you know, and I was married to a Navy man, and
like your dad.
Yeah, hey, you know,
coincidence.
Karma.
But there are no coincidences.
No coincidences. I don't believe there are any coincidences. I think everything is connected. But then, whatever connections we have, it's still up to us to decide what we do.
Oh, luckily you never had to deal with separating from your husband.
Well, let's see. Yes, I did end up divorced. Let me see. After we were married 20 years. I got married when I was a little baby.
She got married early on, around age 18?
In college. I got married in college, yes.
So your dad dies, you take in Buddhism, and you find a man, happens to also be a Navy man,
mm-hmm.
and you marry him.
Right.
You fill that hole. Right? You get that spot filled. Okay, I got love in my life.
Well, one would hope. But again, you know, life is problems, and we happiness comes from victory over our problems. And every time I would have something happen in my life, and I would chant and be able to figure out, okay, rather, how do I go over this? Do I go over this mountain? Do I go around it? Do I go through it? But I wouldn't give up. I've suffered. I've cried. I'm a human being. And Buddha was a human being. You know, he wasn't a god, from my understanding. He was a human being. And we're all human beings. And we all suffer, but we can all end that suffering. And that's, you know, that's how I use Buddhism.
It sounds like, Carmen, through your chanting, that there's a sense of connectedness, that even the words that are used and the fact that you chant with other people, that there, that sense of connectedness. Do you think that that's any significance, or is it just as significant to chant on your own?
No, actually, the Buddhism that I practice, Nichiren Buddhism, which my organization is called Soka Gakkai International, SGI, we believe very deeply that practicing alone is not Buddhism. That if you don't practice for yourself and practice for others, if you're not actively involved in the world, you're really not practicing correctly to help make the world a better place. That's part of our responsibility as human beings. Mm. So, yes, I could go to sit in my room and chant all by myself and not talk to anybody and not do anything, you know, to make the world a better place. But what kind of human being would I really be? I would, yes, maybe I might be happy, but what am I doing to help you be happy?
Have they set up video chats yet between Buddhists who are chanting together? Have they been able to use some of the technology that we have? You know, because this is part of what you're doing. I imagine somewhere in your future program, your TV work you're going to do.
Yeah, who knows?
Why do you have to be isolated? Why can't you have the whole world? Back in the 80s, Marilyn Ferguson set up a thing. It was an international conference. We had a phone conference where we had a whole group of people from all over the world meditating on a telephone,
mm-hmm.
and chanting on a telephone. And was just using telephone was the best thing we had. We didn't have any internet. We didn't have anything yet. And it was like a marvelous experience to think of people from every country doing it. The way you're saying it, that the healing of the planet and the healing of the self takes place in the cooperative effort of what Sherry is suggesting, which means the connectedness. That connected to the other people, connected.
You know, in fact, there is another form of meditation called Tonglen meditation, which connects the meditator with other people. As I understand it, the method is to breathe in the suffering that one that I feel. For example, I feel lonely, say, and I feel that. So if I breathe in the loneliness of all the people throughout the world who feel lonely, breathe that in, and then breathe out compassion. There's a sense of not being alone.
How do you breathe out compassion? How do you do that?
I just wing it.
No, I know. No, but what are you saying? Come on. Breathe out compassion. I mean, like I could tell you this, for example. I can imagine breathing in black and breathing out white. I could picture that. I could picture these things, but I can't picture what would be like On the exhale, do you breathe out? What's the feeling, Sherry? How do you do it?
I think that I find compassion in my body, the warm, loving, embracing, nurturing feeling.
Do you picture people? Do you picture embracing people? What do you picture?
I picture big groups of people.
Big groups of people.
Yes, and I picture kind of a very, when I breathe in, that very sad and very broken type of look on the faces and the backs of the people. The colors are gray. The world looks like it's about to end. And when I breathe out, suddenly I see yellows and I see softness. That's
so you
just
breathe
what,
in
that's
isolation.
The way I see it.
You breathe in isolation and you breathe out harmony. You breathe out connectedness. And you actually visualize it as you're doing it.
Yes, I do.
Uh-huh. And do you have that in your breath work as well?
Well,
is there a process to it besides the chanting
of the
words?
We don't have a breath work per se. We chant, which is breath in itself, because the chanting, which when you're saying Nam Myoho Renge Kyo over and over, you do have to breathe, but you're not conscious of
it. When you're
breathing.
Saying it, what are you visualizing? What do you see?
Well, you had mentioned earlier about clearing your mind. See, and that's when I chant and when we chant, you're actually thinking about the things that you're confronting, your problems and your issues and the things that you want to change. I when I sit down in the morning to chant, I'm thinking, okay, I want to create this television show. I want to have a great relationship with my boyfriend. I'm sending him great energy for his day and for my day. I'm thinking about my family. I'm thinking about getting up and going out into the world. I'm thinking about whatever it is. You know, or maybe I'm having a health problem, and I do have a health problem that I'm dealing with right now. So I'm trying to send the power of Nam Myoho Renge Kyo to that area of my body that is suffering. So I'm sending that energy, and it's not just the mind; it's your whole life that you're functioning, that I'm functioning with. So I'm tapping into all the power of my life, not just the power of my voice, not just the power of my mind, but even the power from the depth of my existence and and my connection to the power in the universe. Whatever you think of that power, I do believe there's, you know, this mystic law, and I believe you can harmonize with it, and then you're right place, right time, and you're in harmony and rhythm, and things flow rather than hitting brick walls. And you know,
I'm sure we could keep this discussion going forever, but I do want to get to something, and I do want to get to some business thing. I do want to keep my promise here. So I've worked at brokerage houses, and I've worked with places, and I remember with derivatives of all sorts that there was all kinds of things that people would buy and sell. And there was always one part of the organization, which might be the new investment organization, which didn't know what the other organization was doing, which may have been the institutional department or the trading department. So they were always operating kind of separately. And so when I saw this thing happen with Goldman Sachs, I said to myself, yep, that's one of the downfalls of the way that it's structured. It's like everybody is trying to outperform. Not each other as much. They're trying to outperform themselves. And in so, they lose sight of the connection to the rest of the people. Unfortunately, what Goldman and this latest scandal or accusation, what seems to have happened is that this group of people who took advantage of some knowledge they had about the overfed mortgage market and how they could benefit by it, who saw this coming, as many people saw it coming, they took advantage of it, but they didn't think about the guy who was selling them the product, who was right in their own department, and they didn't think of the public who was buying the product, because they just thought, we're in our department. This is what we do. This is it. This is the way it works. It's this isolated community of, I got to have more, and here's the way I'll have more. And Goldman Sachs, more than any other place in the world, has produced more financial success as a result of using the system, and the system broke. The system broke because the people weren't connected, and it's beginning to break.
And don't you agree that the problem, the biggest problem there is transparency? That you said them not being connected. Well, they didn't know. They didn't tell, you know, the general public, okay, we have these mortgage-backed instruments over here that we're going to sell you, but then over here on the other side of the building, we're going to have some credit default swaps, and we're going to bet that those mortgage instruments are going to fail. So there was no transparency. You weren't giving the public the ability to make that choice, to have the wisdom you know, to make a choice.
Well, you want to hear a funny thing? I have a friend of mine who works for a big brokerage house. And he said to another friend of mine who was buying a house, he said, hey, you're buying a house and you're going to put up $400,000 to buy a house. We're selling a security. And this is back in the late 80s. No, it was back in the late 90s. And he said, we're selling a thing that shorts the housing market. And they have an instrument. They have a fund that was shorting the housing market. And he said the following. If you're going to buy a house and you're worried about the price going down, buy this instrument. And it'll protect you against the price of the house falling. And if the price of the house runs up, the instrument will go down. You'll lose money in that, but you'll get the value of the price of your house. So they were doing this in other brokerages' houses for many years. This is not a new thing. But because it really exploits some people who get stuck in the middle, you know, because they suffer from it, it's beginning to be a need for, we got to see a total picture. And it's a funny thing
total
because
picture.
We go to Nam Renge, we go to your chanting and your idea, you're saying we have to bring it together. We have to be on the same page. We have to look at it collectively, looking at it individually for personal greed. For personal advantage is just not working over and over again.
Yeah, karma's a very strict law in the universe, in my opinion, and that means that, you know, cause and effect. What you do absolutely will come back to you. So whatever cause I make in my life, and I might say I might think I got away with something, like maybe as a little kid, I might have shoplifted a piece of candy out of a store. I thought, ooh, I got away with that. Well, the law of karma says, well, no, you didn't. That's going to come back to you in some way because you made that cause. So on a bigger scale here where you have a financial instrument that's being sold and the information is not being given clearly and transparently about all the factors, that's a cause. That's a negative cause that's going to come back. And then we saw the reverberations of that and through our whole financial system of all these negative causes of people wanting more, that insatiable greed, oh, look how much money that Mr. X is making over at that brokerage house. Well, I deserve to make that much money, so let me sell the same instruments as they're doing. Let me bundle up all this bad debt, and we won't tell anybody how bad it is, and we'll pay the rating agencies because they really work for us. We'll tell them. They don't understand what we're doing, but we'll tell them what we're doing, and they'll make a give us a, you know, a very high rating on this debt, and we'll sell it because we can. And it all came back to bite the whole country, the whole world. You know, so it came back. It's totally connected. You can't separate them.
A friend of mine asked me, Carmen, he said, you think Goldman's going to suffer? And I said, well, what do you think? And he said, nah, it's too big. And that attitude of some of them are too big to suffer. Some of them are too big to crash. Like the banks and the banks getting the money. And now the banks giving the money back and having triple, you know, having triple the profits that they had before. What were they doing? What were we bailing out? And it's like this kind of feeling that they're too big to crash. Mm-hmm. And the egg gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And one wonders when the volcano is going to happen. One wonders when it's going to suddenly, you're going to look at it and say, yeah, that just doesn't work that way anymore. And I think maybe we're all getting some kind of consciousness and bringing ourselves in that direction.
Well, I think that this recession, the Great Recession of 2007, that there has been a shift in the paradigm of thinking in the world. You know, what is too much? Do I really need that? Is that important for my life? What is important for my life? And I think people have some people, not all people, because quite honestly, Wall Street has gone back to the same way of doing business. It's like it never happened.
And that's the way it is.
And that's because the people's lives didn't change. That the life condition, the fundamental state of those people that are running those businesses has not changed. And so it's all connected. When we look even at the weather patterns in the world and the things that are happening, I believe all that's even connected to the negativity of human beings. It's all connected. You can't separate the person from the environment in any way. So while you talk about banks that are too big to fail and whatever causes those banks as an institution make, then you're talking about the people there. And those people suffer too.
This is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel. I want to thank you very much. Carmen Roberts is our guest. You can get a copy of the interview with Carmen on our website. And look forward to what she's going to be doing. I expect to see some pretty dynamic, amazing stuff. And now, as we're leaving, I want to play some birthday music for people, a number of people whose birthdays I know it is right now.
So birthday music.
For some people I know whose birthday it is right now on our way out. So be back with you tomorrow, my friends. Listen up, my friends. Don't let this get you past. Mariachi, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you.
Birthday. Whoever the birthday is, whatever birthday is, happy birthday.
It's
very interesting,
Armand,
that you should play that happy birthday by the mariachi band. I did just that very same thing a couple of years ago during a giant football game. Friends were gathered watching a game in a bar on the Upper East Side on someone's birthday. I went out and I hired a mariachi band to sing happy birthday to a pair of friends, and they were absolutely quite mortified and happy, and we all enjoyed the playoff victory. The Giants went on to win the Super Bowl, by the way, but that was some time ago. All right, thank you so much, Armand, for that. Happy birthday. You are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free community radio, WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, or on the web at WBAI.org. Coming up next, The Light Show.
I wish you a happy birthday.
Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Reggie, what's happening?
Hey, I just found out that the WBAI Spring Fundraiser is going to start on May 12th.
Oh, no, man. We got to listen to those begging bennies again.
But, hey, I've got an idea.
Ding.
If the listeners go to WBAI.org, and if they go down to the right-hand side of where they said donate now,
right,
and they donate their money,
the
drive can actually end sooner.
Sounds like a plan, my man. Mary, sweet mother Jesus, you're a genius.
So, listeners, if you go to WBAI.org,
please,
and pledge now,
immediately,
we can end the drive soon.
Please.
Then we can go back into regular program.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
State Senator Bill Perkins. Join me on WBAI 99.5 FM on the Eddie Ellis program, On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Justice Report, as a featured monthly commentary. My segment, Behind the Walls, will review prison and criminal justice problems. report and analyze issues affecting our community from here to Auburn. I will open the phone line so that you can talk directly to me. I welcome your questions and comments, which will make me better at what I do for you. So join me at 11 a.m. every fourth Saturday of the month for my special commentary Behind the Horn. And listen every Saturday to Eddie Ellis on The Count, right here at WBAI 99.5 FM, Peace and Justice Radio. This is Senator Bill Perkins, and I approve this issue.
This is Teokas and Ghost Horse, your host for First Voices Indigenous Radio. Join us on WBAI New York, Pacific Radio, every Thursday at 10 a.m. The energies you will hear are always different, powerful, and not in habits of entitlement, occupation, and ownership. First Voices Indigenous Radio on WBAI New York, Pacific Radio, 99.5 FM, every Thursday at 10 to 11 a.m. It is a center of your radio digits, your radio dial, your radio scanner, and all you have to do is lock it in. They say if you repeat something three times, then one will remember it. So, First Voices Indigenous Radio, Thursdays on WPAI New York, Pacifica Radio, 99.5 FM. It's a privilege to be here.
And it's a minute past two in New York City at 99.5.